I think with the issue with air pollution is that, you know, it happens and ends. And by ends, I mean, like, you know, where I live.
Hey, everyone. Before we get into the intersection of air pollution, health, climate inequality and cities, which I think you're going to love, by the way, we wanted to share some exciting news. Climate Curious is going live this autumn, which means you'll be able to come join us face to face at live in-studio recordings in London starting in September. We'd love to meet you, so please grab your ticket using the link in the description and we'll see you there. We actually held our first ever live recording event this summer in partnership with our friends over at the US Embassy in London and The Conduit, which was so much fun. Let's get into it. Why air pollution? Why inequality? So, Ben, for me, there are three things that really bring this to life. And I want to get the numbers right, so I have written it down. Because it's pretty serious stuff, right? So, globally, millions of people die prematurely due to air pollution. One in five premature deaths is due to air pollution. So this is a health issue, right? If you're living in deprivation or you're from a deprived community globally, you're more likely to live in more highly polluted areas, which means this is an equality issue. And if you care about climate, the same things that cause air pollution are causing climate change. So this is a climate issue. So really, no matter which of these circles, because I like me a good Venn diagram, this is the intersection, right? And so this is why we want to talk about it. And as Londoners, I think this really affects us.
Yeah, massively. Do you know what? Should I say this now or should I say it when Destiny comes up? So I grew up in like East London, depending on who you are. Some people say East London, some people say Essex. Don't worry about it. The detail is not important. But I grew up in a little place called Ilford. And I grew up thinking that asthma was like a thing that black kids had. I don't know if anybody else had that experience, but I thought that it was just like a us thing. And I had no idea that that was linked to air pollution until literally like last season of this podcast when somebody said it. And I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, that does make blatant sense. So I think that this is really like a pressing issue that actually impacts all of us and often in ways that we probably don't necessarily first think, right? So I think it's important that we're having the conversation.
So let's kick it off with our first guest. Destiny, why don't you join us up here?
Destiny is 19 years old and the co-founder of Choked Up, which is a campaign run by black and brown students campaigning for changes to clean air law to protect the communities worst affected by air pollution. They advocate for communities of color after having seen firsthand the impacts of living in toxic air and the harm from the lack of governmental intervention to prevent such tragedies from happening again. In the short time the campaign has been active, they've been involved in multiple roundtable conversations and speeches and guerrilla campaigns alongside their peers. Destiny, my G, you're really out here, man. I see what you're doing. So I guess to start off, let's start with this. How are you? How are you doing?
I'm not going to lie. So I think getting here was a bit of a sticky situation. I can't lie. So I study in Oxford and I was working at the union today and I left at like 4, had to like run to get the bus. Turns out it's like 5 minutes early. So I'm sitting on the bus. I'm on like 10%. Like, it's fine. You know what? I remember where I had to get here. My phone dies as soon as I get off Tottenham Court Road Station.
Nightmare.
So I'm literally running on like memories and almost tears. And I get here and it's like, it's all right. Slightly nervous, like shaky a bit, but like that's kind of inevitable. Like I'm actually talking to a crowd instead of like...
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
Like who would have thought? Like,
usually this is on Zoom.
like what are all you doing here? But thank you for making it and for joining us. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, no, I've told you already, we did all of the gushing upstairs, right? I'm super happy that you're here. Super excited to speak to you. I guess a good place to start this is, why is this a conversation that we need to be having? Why air pollution? Out of all of the things that we could possibly be talking about in the world today, all of the issues, I'm sure loads of which you are aware of, why is this something that stands out for you as something we need to be talking about?
So the reason why we speak about air pollution is mainly because people aren't vocal enough about it. You know, we briefly touched on, you know, governmental inaction, and that ripples into, you know, people being indifferent when talking about air pollution, because obviously you can't see the air, you can't see how badly it impacts you until you see, you know, your friends and family really ill. Like, I've got a chronic illness, as well as I do look, like, I am really, really ill. And it's the small things, like, you know, having to leave London to study somewhere else because I knew I'd be somewhat healthier, literally anywhere else. But it's, I think with the issue with air pollution is that, you know, it happens in ends. And by ends, I mean, like, you know, where I live.
Just to clarify, for the listening audience, by ends, we mean local areas.
But, like, my local areas, I lived, like, dotted around South London. So, you know, I was born in Chatham, you know, the southwest, moved to South Norwood, so, like, just behind Crystal Palace Stadium. And now I live in Vauxhall, but, like, you know, the poor side, not the nice industrial buildings. I can't lie to you. I still live in a council estate. But the common denominator between all of that is that, you know, they're all areas that are, like, you know, really deprived, but they also have a high population of, you know, people of colour. And I'm quite literally sick and tired of, you know, always being left behind, always not feeling enough. So, like, you know, I stand here and I put myself in these conversations because, you know, who else will? I think for me and, for, you know, the girls that choked up, it's a question of survival. But it's also coming from a place of empowerment. Like, there have been so many people in the background sort of, like, helping us and, like, giving us, you know, the moral support that we need. Like, I would not have the confidence to sit here and talk about something so, like, such a touching issue to, like, so many people that I don't know. But, like, it's conversations that need to be had. And I think the work that we've done in the past almost 2 years now, which is a while, has been good. But, like, I feel like for ripple effect to happen, you need some sort of, like, stimulus. And, you know, we are the stimulus in question now. Yeah.
We don't get this at home. We don't have
no, we do not.
You've been doing this for 2 years. I'm curious if you could tell us a little bit about that part, because I want to understand kind of your initial experiences in kind of campaigning and being part of this, speaking out, that brought you to, you know, this point.
Yeah, absolutely. So Choked Up was co-founded in 2020, so, you know, in an actual pandemic, and which was a bit difficult. But it really started maybe like the year before that, so 2019. There was a lot of, you know, student solidarity in terms of, like, the climate strikes. Like, I banged that out, like, every single Friday. I was in Parliament Square literally protesting. Like, I remember one day it was gushing with rain, and it was just so nice seeing so many, like, you know, students and people like us just, like, you know, being angry about the climate. But I feel like the environmental movement, it's so huge, and, you know, that there are a million and one, you know, problems with, you know, too little solutions. And so you sort of have to find your niche and something that you feel like you can specialize on. But you know what I mean? Like, something that you can
focus
talk about the most.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I'd begun to realize that, you know, in these climate spaces where, you know, I should have felt like I should be listened to, because, you know, we're all angry about climate. We all want justice from it. You know, being a person of color, being black in these spaces, it's really, really difficult, because you tend to clock, like, you tend to realize that, you know, people see, you know, climate justice or climate activism in general as this, you know, white middle class activity. And it's actually not, because, you know, we should be the forefront of a movement that we're suffering the most from. And so, like, I was just angry for about a year. I was just like, you know, why aren't these people listening to me? Like, we all want the same thing. But and that dismissal, it hurts a lot. But luckily, there's this amazing charity based in Brixton, in South London. So basically, again, ends. And it's called the Advocacy Academy. And
oh, dope. Were you part of Advocacy Academy?
Yeah.
How did I not know that? That's an important piece of information. Shout out Advocacy Academy.
Yeah, no, the Advocacy Academy are amazing. They're a Brixton-based charity that sort of empower 16, 17, 18-year-olds. Mm-hmm. So you've got to be sixth form age, essentially. Every single year there's, like, a cohort, and like, you get, like, this cohort of, like, maybe, like, 10, 20 or so, and you sort of get split into groups in terms of, like, what social justice issue that you care about. So, like, my peers have founded campaigns based on, like, hair discrimination, sexual violence in schools, but me and the girls, Niletti and Anjali, really, really cared about the climate, and we wanted climate justice in our own terms.
Right.
And how we did that was, you know, we had a lot of schooling, so, like, we spent the whole summer learning about, you know, different social justice issues, and then we really thought, you know what, climate is something that we want to work on. And then within that, again, because climate is so broad, we had to find our niche. And what we all had in common is that, you know, we're all from these areas. So again, Streatham, Brixton, you know, Lewisham in particular. And we all, the common denominator that we all saw was that we grew up, you know, breathing toxic air every day, and we were supposed to just act like it was just normal, and clearly it's not. And that's sort of where Choked Up began. We got loads and loads of mentoring in terms of like, and loads of leg ups essentially in terms of like actually starting our campaign. And then from then on, we've just done loads of work again, you know, with the Advocacy Academy, but then we graduated like January last year. So a lot of what we do now is sort of like, you know, between the three of us, which can get difficult, but I think without the Advocacy Academy, we wouldn't be where, you know, we are at the moment. So yeah, like mad shout out to Advocacy Academy.
Massive shout out. And do you know what? It's so important because I think we have this conversation. I feel like I have this conversation on loop, like literally over and over again. Support young people, do things to support young people. We need to give young people help and support and resources and so on and so forth. And I think it can sometimes be hard to like place where we come in that kind of movement or in that kind of triangle. Is it a triangle? That shape, whatever it is, the line of supporting young people. But I think that's a really nice, like, tangible example of how people can help or how people can like resource and equip young people. Because obviously what you're saying is super important, right? First of all, that you're angry. And second of all, that you're angry about something that impacts you and your community. So you are by nature an activist. This is not, and I think what you said was really important, right? That like sometimes we frame this as like a luxury kind of issue for middle-class white people. Even when I think back to like adverts that I used to see on TV, it was always like, donate this money to save the pandas. Or like, do you know what I mean? Like weird little things where you had to have some spare change in your pocket to get involved. But I love that you've like pointed out that this is an issue that's like relevant to people in real time. And that there's a pathway for us to do something about it.
You know, one of the things that you've said a number of times in the kind of in our background research was this idea of like, if you're living in a more deprived area, you're more likely to live in more highly polluted areas. So this correlation piece. Why? Like, what are the physical things?
Yeah, absolutely. So like, I guess on a more social level, which I've already discussed, I won't like go into it too much. It's again, you know, it's environmental racism. It's not having enough funding in the areas that we live in. Like, I'm very working class, been working class all my life. But on a more actual physical sense, so people really get like a grasping understanding, it's not having enough green space where I live. Like, that is a huge issue. I can't lie. I've lived in three different parts of South London, and green space is a myth.
non-existent.
And within that, which sort of intersects to, you know, small things like commuting to school. Like, I lived on Streatham High Road, and if you know Streatham High Road at 8 a.m., it is on gridlock. Oh, my God. It's so, so bad. Like, I could have walked to school, but I don't know why I didn't really as much, but, like... That might be my fault, but it's not really. But like, it's having loads of cars and buses jam packed, and it's just so, so bad. On a lot more scarier level, and maybe this applies to like, you know, kids that were a lot younger, it's actually deep in the fact that, you know, with all these cars, you know, causing all these pollutions, you know, car exhaust fumes are at the same height of a natural child.
Right.
And I think that's when it really hits home. So these little kids are directly breathing from these like toxic gas fumes, and it's just, I think when I've really thought of it like that, it's just so scary. Like, I'm thinking about my little sister with her asthma. I'm thinking about me being now chronically ill at 19. Like, it's just so, so scary. And it's having all of that add up to, you know, just really bad impact, like shorter life expectancy, chronic illness. And there's not been enough being done about it because people just don't see it as enough of a problem. But it is. And I guess what we at Choked Up really want to do is really, like, nip it in the bud, ensure that like every single life is preserved and that we should all be able to just to breathe healthily. Like, it's actually human, it's literally the bare minimum, and the government can't even do that. So like, we're really, really pushing for that essentially.
I mean, I think that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is the actual bare minimum.
It actually is. Like, I still want to live another day.
Thank you so much for explaining that, because I think that's actually really important. Those physical things, like where you, like the proximity to roads, the proximity to the exhaust pipe, all that stuff, it's really tangible. I'm curious to know how, once you decided, you focused in on air pollution and you started to learn about it, how did you start to see that manifesting and impacting your lives? Like, did it give you a way of looking at the things you'd experienced with new, kind of a fresh perspective?
Yeah, absolutely, because like, I never actually deeped how much I actually normalized. So like, my little sister's got like asthma and I've got like anemia, which like obviously isn't great, especially when you're like in London. And like, you sort of just like brush it away. And like how you said about like how you thought like, you know, getting asthma was like a black people problem. Like, I could not tell you how many of my peers had asthma. Like, we used to just like...
So many. We used to literally want like 4 out of every 5 people. Yeah. Massive. That's sorry official. To interrupt. Yeah, that's not a real statistic, by the way. Sorry.
And like, I'm not going to lie, like in primary and secondary, we used to like crack jokes about it. We used to be like, haha, you've got asthma.
Yeah, and you can't breathe.
And they were like, well, you fall asleep all the time. So like, and like stuff like that. And like, I guess we're like, you know, joking about with our trauma, but like when you actually deep it and you're in a position where like you feel like, you know, you can talk about this, I don't know, like it takes a lot out of you, like actually talking about, you know, the issues that affect you the most, you and your family and your age mates. Like it's a lot, but like I wouldn't want to do anything else. Mm. Like, and I don't think anybody could speak about these issues better than I could. So again, it's really bridging that gap between, you know, people not understanding the issue because they can't ever relate to it, but also making them aware, like, you know, this is an actual thing. Mm. Like, you might be living your best life in Kensington. Like, wouldn't it be nice if I could too? But like,
maybe we should all do this together.
Yeah, yeah, we should all get up and move to Kensington. Yeah. But like, yeah, it's really, it's coming out with like trauma and with a, like a good hearts and minds approach to things. Because people could be so defensive about things that they don't necessarily care about, but people just got to listen.
Yeah.
I'm curious if you could tell us a bit more about the campaigns you've run with Choked Up. Like, you in the wonderful bio that Ben read, talked about guerrilla campaign. I want to know what you guys have done.
Right, you sound like G-Unit. That sounds good.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. It's proper underground, guys. Like, you wouldn't know. So edgy. Anyways. So, okay, no, I'm actually going to speak now. But I think, yeah, so... So it's back to 2020, right? Obviously, we're a brand new campaign. Nobody really knows about us. No, nobody really knows what we're going on, right? And so we really need to put our name out there on a national scale. And so this was actually with the help of Advocacy Academy once more, because one of the requirements you had to do was, you know, start off with like a campaign type thing to make sure like the general public knew about you. And, you know, we had to think about what we're going to do. You know, every Friday night, again, sat on Zoom, you know, fighting for our lives, trying to apply ideas. But what we came to was we planned this for like the good like autumn term, so it gets dark early. But anyways, that's not the point. What we did was, in the end, was we had these, so we designed these road signs, like, you know, the road signs you see on the road, and how they like have maybe like, you know, caution something zone, you know, you can't go past X miles an hour in this area. And what we did was, we sort of like designed our own versions, and there were they had statistics about like air pollution and how if you're from like a more deprived area, you are going to be worse affected by it. I think it's like, from what I remember, it was like you're 22% more affected. Not 22% more affected. That doesn't make sense. But like, if you live in a more deprived area, you are, or like an area with like a high BAME population, you are 22% more likely to be affected by what air pollution harms. If that makes sense. And other things. And like, I think in particular, I think my favorite one was, it was a big road sign and it said like pollution zone, and you had this big red circle, and then within that there was like looked like bare clouds, it was all gray and stuff, and there's a silhouette of like a mother and a child, and they both had afros, so sort of like symbolize that, you know, it's like black and brown people really, really, well, I guess black people in this context, but like, again, black and brown people, you know, really, really going through this, you know, bearing the brunt or something that just wasn't their fault. And that gained a lot of national traction, I can't lie. And so, but it was really, really good. And I think one of the most important aspects of it was that, you know, we didn't put them in, you know, the fancy posh north areas of like central London. Mm. We put them in the areas that we lived in, you know, so most of them were put up in Lewisham, but also Brixton, because again, that's where we all like frequented and resided in. But we also put them, we also got funding from like more charities, and we were able to put them in Whitechapel. And again, Whitechapel has a really like high brown population, which is absolutely beautiful. I love Whitechapel. If I wasn't from South, I might live in Whitechapel, but who knows. And I think what was really nice was that with the extra funding that we did get, we were able to put the signs in Bengali, so we'd actually be able to communicate with the community there. And I thought that was really, really beautiful. And again, the national traction came from, you know, having, you know, the news sort of like cover it, you know, like regionally, which was a good shout. You know, I think our mates were like writing in newspapers, like the guys have written for Gardem and The Guardian about, you know, these issues, which is like, it's really, really important, right? And I thought that was I thought that's pretty sound. You can actually see a copy of the road signs, because obviously the originals got taken down by like the local councils, which is a bit peak. but if you go to the Welcome Collection in like Euston, there's an exhibition, and it has our road signs. I think it's up until October.
So that's good, pretty cool. Marion, we've got to stop talking to young people because I feel like such a bum whenever I hear how much people are doing. I'm always like, shoot, man.
This is our third conversation with a young person in 3 days, and we're about time to retire, I think.
Yeah. It's close to the end. I'm interested in like what the, because you raise a super important point, right, which is about the intersectionality of this issue and who are the people who are most impacted by what's going on. And I think you're right to like name black and brown communities and then to also refocus that on black communities who are disproportionately affected because of the areas that they live in. I'm interested in what the response was from your community to the campaign. Was it like a conversation that you were having with your mom, or was it like a thing where people were like, oh, I saw that thing that you did, or were you just like flying below the radar, like did nobody really know? Did you see like the ripples of it happening in real time?
Yeah, absolutely. We're kind of bait now. Oh, sorry.
I'm a little bit famous now.
bait just means like people, a lot of people know of us. If not by
I really
name, then...
I really have to say I'm loving this dictionary that you're
Yeah. You're just in the middle of the cross path.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, no, this dictionary is instilled in me because obviously I study in Oxford, so like I constantly have to translate every single bit of London slang. Yeah, yeah. So it's practicing second nature now. But like, I think a lot of people know us, like in our community. You have a lot of like grassroots organizations that are like, again, quite regional, and like being able to like connect with them, you know, other activists in the area. It's just been really, really nice because I guess, you know, the first aim that we really had was to really get the ball rolling, to really get the conversation started. And, you know, it's really good that it started in our communities at first because they know what's going on the most.
Yeah.
They're living through it too, essentially. And I have 4 siblings, and they absolutely eat up everything that I do. Eat up means like,
I love it.
Eat up basically means like encourage. Like they're like my biggest cheerleaders, and they're all really proud of me. And like so is my family, and so is the girls' families. And like it's just really nice and refreshing to feel like, you know, you can do the right thing. I think the youth constantly feel, you know, brushed away. You know, we've all got so much anger and so much passion. We all care about things, and we don't ever have a medium to sort of be able to, you know, express that anger, you know, express that sadness, that despair. But it doesn't always have to be. And again, that's where, you know, the conversations start. So, you know, really, really good reception, I can't lie. But you also have people, this is more like online, but like, you know, everything's at your fingertips. This is sort of shying away from like home communities because they get it. They don't need, like, I don't need to like explain every single thing to them. Like, yeah, we're all suffering, we're all choked up, right? But I think one thing that we've all sort of picked up on Twitter in particular is, again, it's like the silly comments like, stuff like, I live in a well-off area, you know, air pollution isn't really that much of a problem. Like, oh, why is it only black and brown people that are like worst affected by this? You know, I have asthma too. And it's like, I'm not dismissing that you might have health problems. I'm saying that black and brown people suffer more because of it.
Yeah.
It's because of things beyond our control that means that we are worse affected by it. You know, it's dishing out words like intersectionality, environmental racism, which all seem like really, really heavy terms. But because it's my lived experience, it's not something I feel like I constantly have to explain.
Yeah.
But like, I don't mind explaining it. So like with environmental racism, it's kind of in the name, right? It's, you know, it's the fact that, you know, black and brown people are bearing the brunt of the climate crisis,
right,
due to the fact that they can't control, because nobody can control racism. If we could, that would have been put in the bin ages ago.
Yeah, we'd have been done with
literally,
it.
Literally, we wouldn't be having this conversation, right? But like, and it's constantly having to bring that agenda out because we're just not being listened to.
Right.
And so we will force our way into these conversations if needs be. But we don't really have to do that as much because, you know, people are finally waking up and listening. You know, it's being invited in spaces like this and having people like listen because, you know, we all care. And it takes empathy to sort of, you know, take on a perspective that you might not ever relate to. And it's a collective thing. Collective power is important.
Okay, so I have a final question that I want to ask you, which is, now going forward, what is your focus, you and the team at Choked Up, and personally?
Absolutely. So going forward, I mean, we've already done the whole raising awareness thing, but you can only do so much with raising awareness. We really want to instill our impact and ensure that it is enshrined in actual law. So there's been a lot of like news going around about the environment bill and stuff like that. But what we want is to ensure that black and brown lives are protected in law. And it starts with the government actually having, you know, sustainable targets. And one thing that we've sort of picked up on is WHO, the World Health Organization, they discussed about PM2.5 levels having been reduced to a certain level, and that certain level is around like 10 micrograms.
What does that mean?
Sorry, what is PM2.5?
This is getting all technical. PM stands for particulate matter, so like the really, really small itty bitty bits of like particles. But PM2.5 is particularly harmful because those, you know, small particles are nitrogen oxide, dioxide, whatever. That's the one that's sort of, you know, it's getting in our bloodstream, it's going in our blood, you know, it's binding with like our oxygen cells and stuff like that. And that's what's causing the actual bodily harm. And so we essentially, what we need to do is actually crack down on that. And so what we want the government to do is essentially, you know, work on those targets, but, you know, work on that, you know, 10 microgram target of PM2.5 as like a legal limit of air pollution. Although there shouldn't really be a legal limit, but yeah, we've got to work on something.
Legal limits of air pollution is wild. But yeah.
It's so contradictory. Like, who would have thought legal air pollution? But like, we need something. The government needs something to work on to be able to surpass that limit. But obviously, it hasn't really been properly enshrined in law yet. But we're really, really like fighting for our lives to ensure that that will be the case.
I'm Christina Tribble. I'm the cultural attaché. I'm a career diplomat. Cultural attaché is just kind of a fancy way of saying that I promote sort of educational, cultural, civil society ties between the United States and the United Kingdom. And that's where the partnership with TEDx and Conduit has come in. This is our second in a series of conversations about climate and justice. Now, this issue tonight, when we were talking about all the things that we can talk about, why would Conduit, TEDx, and the U.S. Embassy want to talk about air pollution? I think in some places there are people who can avoid that conversation, or they take for granted the air that we breathe, and that's not always so easy. And so really happy to be here with TEDx and with The Conduit to be hosting you all tonight and continuing this conversation, and I look forward to many more. In the meanwhile, I remain climate curious.
Okay, we've come to our last segment. Anyone here, I'm going to ask a really scary question. Anyone here actually listen to the podcast? No. Okay,
rude,
what have you?
Rude.
So for those of you who don't listen to the podcast, this might seem a little bit strange, but I think, cue the music.
And now it's time for our climate confessions. Let's fess up to the bad habits we just can't kick.
So, this, if you didn't catch that from Ben, this is a segment we like to call Climate Confessions. Let me explain. Sometimes in this space, it can feel like the people taking, you know, huge action on climate change are perfect. They don't make any mistakes. This bubble, this impression of perfectionism, and that if you somehow aren't perfect yourself and doing every single thing, you somehow don't have a space in that. But what we found is that everyone who's doing awesome work on this also isn't perfect. And so this is a way of kind of bringing everyone in and showing our listeners that actually you don't have to be perfect to take meaningful action. And so we ask our guests to make a climate confession. And I'm happy to go first, if that helps.
Please.
I want to note to all of you that this is now going into season 4.
Yeah, this is rough. This is
Ben
so
and I have probably confessed like 25 different things at least.
It's brutal.
Each.
It's so bad.
It is really brutal. So they're starting to get more and more obscure.
Here's another one. Woo!
So my climate confession is actually probably going to be something that will come up again, but it's about flying, because I learned something the other day, because I've always been like, flying isn't really an issue, it's a distraction, you know, et cetera. We can talk about this. But I've actually found out that if you're a frequent flyer for work like I am, you are actually part of the problem. So that's my climate confession. So if you're just taking a holiday a couple times a year, that's fine. But if you have to travel for work, like I do,
you are the problem.
I am part of the problem. Yeah. So that's my climate confession.
I'm not going to lie. I shop at Urban Outfitters.
No, because like, destiny.
The best part is this is supposed to be a judgment-free space, but Ben does not allow that.
No. Oh, not Urban Outfitters. Oh my gosh.
I mean, you don't have to defend yourself.
I'm joking. Okay. sorry.
Like, obviously, I thrift. Like, I've grown up thrifting all my life. Like, the moment you go to uni and you get money, it's like, oh, you know, middle class by association. I can afford this.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie, like, there are nice things in Urban Outfitters.
Yeah.
And, like,
I mean, we've all done it.
Drip is important, man. It's fundamental. It's a crucial part of living a good life. I understand where
literally,
you're coming from.
Like, it's triple die, guys.
Yeah.
But do you know what's worse? I literally bought a dress for Urban Outfitters and it like broke 3 weeks later and then I bought a new one.
Oh, the double confession.
Oh.
Brilliant.
You didn't even invest in a sewing machine with the loan. Oh, no.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I can't sew either. But I made the dress into like a skirt. So I folded it like
that. Okay. We'll allow it on this occasion.
We'll allow it.
So it comes out, guys. But my confession is I shop at Urban Outfitters sometimes.
Thank you for sharing that with us. Thank you so much for joining us, Destiny. It's been a wonderful conversation.
Mm.
I think, unless you have anything else to say, I don't want to.
You're a hero. That's all I wanted to say. You are a actual hero. Thank you so much. Not just for joining us, but also for the work that you're doing, because it's important. It is really, really important. Thank you so much for joining us this week. We really hope you enjoyed this episode.
If you did, please rate, subscribe, and share this episode with a curious friend. It makes us possible to keep making this amazing content for you.
Oh, and slide into our DMs at TEDx London and let us know which climate extraordinaires you'd love to hear from next time. But wait, that is not all.
No, this podcast was produced by the amazing Josie Coulter.
Curation and research by the genius Tara Cooper.
Artwork designed by the visionaries that are Sabrina Russo and Rebecca Mingus.
Mixed and engineered by the iconic Ben Beheshti, aka The Falcon, who also composed our banging theme tune.
Presented by me, Mariam Pasha.
And by me, Ben Hurst. Stay curious.